better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan on another great October day. Hope you had a nice weekend. I thought the farmer's market today in Sebastopol was just absolutely wonderful, and it was particularly great when the zombies came walking through. You know, there's nothing like a parade of zombies to, you know, perk you up. We followed them for a while, so I guess you could say that we became zombie stalkers for a bit and went over to the zombie party over at Copperfields, where there were prizes given to everyone who found an eyeball or a finger. As we left, there were a few missing eyeballs, so they were searching for them. But it was really great, great fun. And then I did manage to get to a couple places on art trails as well. One of my favorite, probably my current favorite visual artist, Mary Vaughn. Oh, she is such an amazing painter. She's been here on Mouthful a couple of times. She's been really involved with all of the art stuff that goes on down at South A Street. I walked in, and within, she claims it was 4 seconds. I say it was 20. She claims it was 4 seconds. I found a painting I had to buy. It's one of her, they're landscapes, but they're abstract landscapes. There's nothing really, or not much that's really representational. You wouldn't actually look at a landscape and see that, take a picture of what you see. It has the most beautiful crow in it. And there's a funny story, but I don't think I'm going to tell you that part of it. Maybe later. Anyway, Mary Vaughn just does fabulous work. She's spending quite a bit of time in Nebraska these days taking care of her ailing mother. But she still has her studio on South A, and she continues to come back. She paints while she's in Nebraska. She comes back. She participates in the South A Street sales and that sort of thing. Anyway, that was just a great weekend for me in Sonoma County. And now the studio here, times like this, I really wish that you could watch this on a webcast or something. First of all, my guests, both returning guests, Stephanie Rosenbaum is here in 2001 when her book Honey from Flower to Table came out. And now she is back with the Astrology Cookbook, and it is almost her birthday. So welcome back to Mouthful, Stephanie.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to see you, and we'll talk about what you were doing today, too. And then we also have, coming back, I've lost track of how many times you've been here, Frederick. Frederick Lavoie-Pierre, who for several years also produced Mouthful. She is here to talk about the upcoming Insectapalooza taking place next Saturday at Sonoma State. But she has on her hand a leaf bug, and it's dancing. You have to see, you have to go to YouTube and see the video of the dancing cockatiel, or cockatoo if you haven't. They're playing some like upbeat jazz number, and the cockatoo is like rocking out on the back of a chair, lifting his legs and keeping time. And I swear we should be playing some music for this leaf bug.
Yes, I want to make a video.
You should, yeah.
And actually, our media person at Sonoma State saw this guy dancing and said, oh, we need to make a commercial next year.
Do we know what the dancing behavior is? Is it pervasive for this species, or is it just this guy who likes to rock out?
Well, this guy actually has several different defenses. One is that a lot of people think he's a praying mantis and they're predaceous, but he's actually a stick insect. And they eat leaves. This one's from Australia and eats eucalyptus. And then another defense, of course, is he looks like a dead leaf.
Yeah, very much like a dead leaf.
What he's doing, I believe, is swaying in the wind.
Oh, so he's mimicking a leaf.
Yes,
behavior.
And if he gets really afraid, he will put up his tail and make you think he's a scorpion.
Scorpion, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he waves those front legs around as well.
And so I'm really enjoying these little pets.
Does he have a name?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Probably female.
Okay. How old is she?
Less than a year. Most stick insects don't live longer than a year.
Oh, okay.
And it will get about 5 or 6 inches
long.
Okay,
would you say it's about, looks like it's probably, count the tail, about 2 inches long right now?
Yes.
From antenna to tail?
Yeah, so they're cute and fun to hold. The big ones get a bit intimidating for many people.
Do they have any stinging or biting behavior?
No, not unless you're a leaf.
Okay. Now, obviously these can't be in the wild here since they're from Australia.
Right.
So how are you able to have them?
I applied for a permit. And actually these were shared with me by the Entomology Outreach Program in Davis. They gave me three different species and they said as soon as you get a permit. And I'm very anxious for them to give me some leaf insects, which actually look exactly like leaves.
Yes. I saw a lot of those in Malaysia.
Well, that's where this one's from,
oh, okay.
Malaysia. But he said, let's see how you do with these for a year and then come back next fall and get a leaf.
So have you had her for a year?
No, they just gave me these a couple of weeks ago, and they've been a big hit. And as I look for volunteers to come and help at Insectapalooza, I just carry this little guy around. I go to the biology club and say, look. And
she's not trying to escape.
No, they actually kind of, well, I don't think tame is even the right word, but they get habituated to being held by humans.
And held specifically by you? I mean, does she know it's you, or is it like the physicality of being held?
You know, a child wanted to hold her yesterday, and she didn't want to go.
Okay. So she is comfortable with it's person specific.
Well, they're very chemical sensitive organisms. Insects have all kinds of receptors.
So tell us about Insectapalooza.
So Insectapalooza is a fundraiser for our program, and we decided last year we had a fundraiser. It was Garden Allies. It was for adults. And someone suggested that since we are actually an outreach program that works with children, we should do something that was a little more family friendly. And Insectapalooza has been evolving over the last couple months. We have an entire lecture series.
Wow.
We have three different labs, aquatic invertebrates, basic bugs, Garden Allies, lots of microscopes set up. We've tried to make our event have lots of child-friendly things. You could be 4 years old and look through a microscope and say, wow, that's so cool, and move on. Or you can be an adult and, you know, get a little more information.
So cool.
Yeah.
Look under a microscope and say, that's so cool.
It's, we have entomology students in every room. The Children's Museum is coming, and they're setting something up where you build a little wire insect and put it in a wind tunnel to see if it can fly.
Oh, the Sausalito Children's Museum?
No. You know, we have one in Sonoma County now.
Oh, where is
and
it?
It's mobile at this time, and they're raising money to have a physical location, and we're working with them a lot. I say they're about magnets and bubbles, and so they love working with Sonoma State and with the biology department, and I'm actually setting them up with some physics students.
What are the details?
The details.
So
it's 9 to 4 on Saturday. The lectures go all day. The garden tours go all day. Everything else you can just do as you please. It's $10 for adults. It's $5 for students with identification. It's free for those under 10. And only $5 if you're between 10. If you're a teenager and you want to come see insects, it's only $5. And we have a wonderful silent auction that's developed full of a lot of insect-themed things, you know, tickets to the Cal Academy. The Cirque du Soleil is providing us with two premium tickets for their new show, which is coincidentally all about insects.
It is? Oh, wow.
Yes, it's called OVO, and I'm dying to see it.
And then there's going to be a lot of the little stars.
Oh,
right?
we have a live insect zoo. It's right next to our insectivore room, and we have a lot of people coming to table. Hallberg Butterfly Gardens will be there. Kathy Biggs is bringing her dragonflies, and of course we're having the California carnivores come with their insectivorous plants.
Keeping them in a different room.
And yes, they're down in the lobby. And although he's providing us with a nice display as well for our insectivore room. And, you know, many things rely on insects for their food. And so we thought that was important.
Well, it's just, you know, I have to remember I'm on the radio because I could just sit here and watch this bug sway.
It's
really beautiful. I'm fascinated with praying mantises, and it does have. And I was talking about Mary Vaughn. The thing that made me think particularly about Mary was one of her new paintings. It's fairly small. It's called Mantis. And I could immediately imagine that I saw three or four praying mantis in the painting. And actually, only one was intentional, and that was the one I didn't see.
That's interesting. Well, you know,
it's got that really interesting, almost anthropomorphic like head that a praying mantis has.
It kind of turns. And,
yeah, it's very much looks like it's paying attention and trying to get your attention.
It's interesting how many artists actually are inspired by insects. Mm-hmm. And a couple weeks ago, our art department at school contacted me and said, "Can we have an art show?" And so they're going to have a little art show and sale. And
They're doing as part of the
Insectapalooza. Oh, they're very inspired by insects, and you know. And then we've had a couple artists give us things for the auction as well. And so, I could anticipate expanding that whole art, art and theater.
Sure, absolutely.
Next year,
since we're you know, it's mouthful and all that, and a lot of people, you know, they have a picnic and they don't want insects at their picnic. You know, you don't want cockroaches in your house. So let's talk about the whole beneficial side. I mean, we probably wouldn't exist as we do if it wasn't for the entire world of insects and all that they do. But let's talk a little bit about that.
That's true. So I came across a very interesting fact a few days ago. That is that if we lost only bees, termites, and ants from our ecosystem, all life on this planet, all terrestrial life, would completely and utterly collapse.
Really?
Which I found
so
fascinating.
Bees, termites, and
ants.
Ants.
Those three things. But yet we could take every single vertebrate off this planet, and especially humans, and the planet would just keep going along. Just fine. And so insects are incredibly important. They're small and we overlook them or we find them annoying. But without them, you know, you wouldn't be eating most of the things that you eat.
Yeah, well, certainly bees responsible for I think that's the most obvious one is pollination by bees.
Right. 85% of our food is pollinated. You know, silk clothing, cotton, chocolate, which is very
If we expand it to some other like bats, get into bats as well, because bats, I think, are the only pollinators of something like 800 different plants. We wouldn't have any avocados if it wasn't for bats.
Right. They pollinate and they also eat a lot of insects.
Yes.
And so they're featured in our insectivore room.
Oh, they are?
Well, I tried to get Patricia Winters, who you must have
met. Oh, yeah. But she's been on the show before.
Yes, and she laughed when I called. She says, "I'm booked a year in advance for October."
Is.
And so she'll be there next year
great.
The day before Halloween.
Yeah, Patricia Winters. And she's now moved her California Bat Conservation International to Forestville. She has some rehabilitation homes where the bats can, you know, live in a somewhat natural environment until they're ready to be, you know, released, if they are. But I did an article about her, a very long time ago, back when the what's now the Bohemian was the paper. And she came over to my house with bats and with Jose. I'll never forget Jose. Jose was a little Mexican free-tail bat. And he sang. He's gone now. He broke his femur and had to be euthanized. Breaking your femur is very bad for a bat.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I didn't know bats had femurs.
Yes. Bats have femurs.
They're pretty much built like we are, but with wings.
With wings. Yeah. And he lived in her bra.
Right.
And because he liked to be warm. And he had bonded with her. His mother was killed before he was before his umbilical cord was dried, and he was, I think, one of the first bats successfully raised. And they learned a lot from Jose. When she tried to introduce him, the other bats freaked out, and he freaked out. And it's that if a bat doesn't learn how its particular species flies, it can't be by a certain age. It's like by 6 weeks or 8 weeks, it doesn't learn to, because the mother teaches them to fly. So Jose flew counterclockwise, I think it was, and that freaked out all the other bats who fly clockwise, and they identify themselves. That's one of the flight pattern is one of the way they know you're one of them. Uh-huh. And so they all were like freaked out by Jose. So Jose had to stay with Patricia. And the first time I met her, I was at Point Reyes at a bat seminar. This woman behind me, her T-shirt would move. And then all of a sudden I turned around at one point and this wing came out of her T-shirt. And I was like, okay, I got to make this woman my friend.
We're going to have a lot of fun next year because Insectapalooza, which is always going to be the first Saturday before Halloween, next year is going to fall the day before Halloween. And
oh, wow. So that's right. Halloween's on a Sunday.
Yeah. So we're thinking that we may have to have a costume contest next year.
Oh, insect costumes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What fun. Well, I think we should take a little musical break here on Mouthful, and we're going to come back and get Stephanie into this conversation as well. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. It is KRCB. Thanks for tuning in. We are talking with Frederic Lavoie-Pierre about the upcoming Insectapalooza taking place at Sonoma State next Saturday, October 24th, from 10 to 4. Where is it taking place, Frederic?
We're kind of taking over the Darwin Hall, which is School of Science and Technology. Yeah. So we have things on three different floors in that building. There's lots of room to spread out.
Uh-huh. And parking is free on the weekends.
Is free on the weekends. And all you have to do is go to the Sonoma State website, and there's a link right there this week to Insectapalooza.
Great.
And we think there's going to be a lot of people, so we've added some outdoor things, you know, jump house for kids and sidewalk chalk and just some outdoor activities.
Okay, well, Stephanie, the astrology cookbook. Actually, you have to hand me my copy.
Okay, absolutely.
Tell me the story of how this book came about.
Well, I'm going to try not to be distracted by the jumping spider with the metallic green fangs over here, but it
doesn't know how to unlock
its cage.
It's going to be okay.
So we're kind of getting in the Halloween mood here. It's actually an idea that I had kicking around in my head really for a long time, and I thought, you know, why do people read their horoscopes? Well, for a lot of reasons, but a lot of times I think really people want to know if they're going to find love.
Love and money.
And, you know, food kind of goes right in there. You know, that's sort of our third paw, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, you know, what do people really care about? You know, food, sex, and love. And I thought, well, I can, you know, kind of get at least two of those right here. So I thought, really, I really want to do an astrology cookbook, and I really want to gear it towards love. This is the astrology cookbook. It's not just what you cook for yourself. It's what you cook for your sweetie.
Yes, and we should say that the subtitle is A Cosmic Guide to Feasts of Love.
So, you know, you have a hot Aries lover out there. You have a Capricorn you got your eye on. This is the menu. Each chapter is a menu, and it's really the seduction menu for each sign.
And how did you, I mean, are you really experienced?
No.
How did you figure this out?
I would love to say that I'm an astrologer and that I, you know, you can call me for readings and all that, but I'm not actually. I'm a foodie.
I mean, are you really experienced in dating a lot of different signs?
Well, you know, I had the world's best dating job for a long time.
You did?
I was a restaurant critic.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Yes.
For at the Bay Guardian and at San Francisco Magazine. And I did a little work with Time Out New York and City Search here in the Bay Area and, you know, various places. So I had the job where I had to go out to dinner all the time, which meant I could meet anyone and say, you know, wow, that Jamaican barbecue place you just told me about, you know, oh, you can't remember the name of it. Well, you've got to give me your number because I'm going to call you and find, you got to find out what that place is, and then we got to go because it's my job. I need people to go out to dinner with all the time.
I didn't
time.
Take anywhere near as much advantage of my job as a restaurant critic as it, I should
no,
have.
No, really, I used it all the time because you it's your job.
I did it. I did. Yeah. I actually did it, but I didn't go that. You know, I didn't go that. I would ask people. Thank God, I really need someone to go out to dinner.
Right.
You know, it's work. You want to go?
I go exactly. And so then they're on a date with you before they even realize.
Yes.
You know, you've it's so it's very handy that way. So you know, yeah, I had some dating experience, shall we say? And you know, now of course I have the opportunity to just ask total strangers what their signs are. And people sure. now expect me to be able to guess, which sometimes I can hit the nail on the head, and that's actually really fun. But that's not really fair. I mean, I can guess my friends, I guess. But, you know, you have a 1 in 12 chance.
Exactly.
So it's, the odds are not too bad. And the fun part is if you actually do guess, you know, people think you're really amazing.
And you can do some surreptitious research without people knowing it that, you know, will really rule out certain possibilities. You can narrow it down to, I think, 1 in 4.
Mm-hmm. I was at a book fair and this woman who I knew slightly already, and she said, well, what's my sign? I looked at her and she had this tawny, curly, fabulous hair. And I said, well, you have to be a Leo. Look at your mane. And she stepped back and said, why, yes. So, you know, there's definitely people do give you some hints. And when I was researching this, I was writing up Sagittarius and, you know, reading all this stuff and reading a lot of books and doing a lot of research. And I thought, you know, sometimes you think about celebrities, you know, who's what? And I said, you know, Ted Nugent has got to be a Sagittarius. And, you know, thank God for the internet. I just looked it up on my Ted Nugent birthday and they're like, well, he's a Sagittarius, you know, smack. I think his birthday is December 12th, smack dab in the middle of the month. He couldn't be more Sag, you know, which I thought was great. You know, he's Mr. Hunter Gatherer, you know, Mr.
Okay,
kill
yeah.
him and grill him. And, you know, there's the Sagittarius, you know, the archer.
And so the menu is pig candy.
Yes, it's
what it sounds like.
It's what it sounds like. It's actually as it says. It's not
glazed
candy.
Bacon.
It's not candy for pigs. It's candy from pigs.
Yes.
And yeah, it's brown sugar rubbed bacon. I had it at a thing at the Southern Foodways Alliance does in Oxford, Mississippi. Does a fantastic conference every year, and I was down in the Delta, and they had that to start out. It was the whole conference was about sugar in the South. And so they had that as an appetizer, and I just fell in love with it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know if I've ever had anything with bacon that I didn't like.
Yeah,
you know, it's just hard to mess it up.
It really is. I haven't had. I know that there's some cocktail bars in New York that have
the
like bacon
teeny,
the bacon teeny with the crushed bacon around the edge of the glass. I've never had that.
Yeah, and I read somebody was putting a strip of fried bacon, you know, fried crisp. Into a martini, and it's like
a dirty martini, I hope.
Yeah, it's like, well, okay.
Hey.
Okay, so let's see, going on with the Sagittarius: pork chops with apples and quince, stuffed winter squash, braised red cabbage, white salad, which Belgian endive, frisée, turnips, radish, pomegranate, always food of love, pomegranate, blood orange, and then a really simple champagne vinegar and mustard dressing, winter pear galette,
which of course has lard in the crust.
Good for you.
Yeah. The idea is that you know your Sag sweetie has gone out and hunted a wild boar for you, which I know you can do out here in Sonoma.
Yeah.
And you've got to, they've dragged it home and you've got to make the best of it. So, you know, you're going to use every part. So yeah, but I pretty much tried to have a vegetarian option in each menu. So there's always something to make if you're not down with the pig. So yeah, it was a combination of research, reading a lot of books. I have to say, two books that were really handy were Black Love Signs and Gay Astrology. These were two
Black Love Signs. What is that?
It was a book that was in the library that was basically, it was an astrology book geared towards an African American audience.
Oh,
and it was great. It was very no nonsense, no woo woo. It was really funny and
I would
great.
Love to read that.
That was great, because you know some astrology books can take themselves kind of seriously.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
And, you know, especially when you're researching this, when you're in the library, the astrology section of the library, thanks to the Dewey Decimal System, is sort of right next to all these sort of conspiracy theory books, you know, like the Chariot of the Gods, you know, kind of books. And so those books get a lot of play in the public library. I mean, that's a busy section. And so I would be there with my stack of, you know, astrology and especially the astrology love books, and I would always feel like I wanted
Sun
to say,
Signs by Linda
Sun
Goodman.
Signs by Linda Goodman. Don't you remember those? I loved those. All through the 70s, I read those. And yeah, so I always felt I wanted to actually explain to the librarians I was, you know, I was doing research.
Right, research. Yes, you're not trying to figure out your boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And then gay astrology book?
Yeah, there was a wonderful gay astrology book, which again was pretty much geared towards men, and mm-hmm. it was very funny, very down to earth, and just really, really fun to read, and kind of didn't pull any punches. And that's what I was trying to do with the book, because I love astrology. I think it's fascinating and really fun. But since I'm not an astrologist myself, I really wanted to kind of make it a fun, accessible book that even if you only ever read your horoscope in Cosmo when you're getting a pedicure, you know, you could pick this book up and have a good time with it.
I have to look at Cancer. Pâté rillettes, terrine on baguettes, leek quiche, some cheeses, cherry tomatoes, olives, and radishes, strawberries and Greek yogurt with honey, and lemon madeleines.
That was a sort of a French picnic, because okay. I think that Cancers, they try to be hard on the outside, but they're real swoon machines inside. They're really romantic. They really love to be wooed. And I think that you really also need to get them out of their shell, and you need to get them out of the house. They do best, you know, they do best if you really want to woo them, I think, get them out in the great outdoors, and it sort of warms them up. And so I loved the idea of sort of being under the Eiffel Tower having a lovely French picnic.
Oh, that sounds brilliant. That'd work.
Would that work?
That kind of outside definitely would work. One of the things I found in all of my years when I was working in restaurants, and even, you know, still then as a restaurant critic, and if I ever got to know anyone, which I actually avoided as much as I could while I was a critic, mm-hmm. There's a very, I think, large percentage of Cancers working in kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
It just... You know, I think I don't believe in astrology. It's ridiculous. You know, what am I thinking? And I think that because I have Mercury in Gemini in the cusp mm-hmm. of the ninth house, which
right.
makes me very cerebral
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
very disinclined to believe such nonsense
right.
as astrology.
Exactly.
But then two things happen. You know, somebody else who's just great in the kitchen, I start talking to him, it's like it's another Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mercury goes direct. I mean, Mercury goes retrograde and everyone goes nuts and nothing
right.
works and
mm-hmm.
everything gets lost. And it's like...
I know, and a lot of my friends who work at Good Vibrations or other sex shops or, you know, mm-hmm. things, they work in sort of sex education and uh-huh. that sort of thing. Scorpios. I mean, Scorpios.
Who work in the
sort of sex education and that,
oh, God, that
and are interested
so
in that sort
much
of stuff.
Sense.
They're, you know, they're all, you know, the dark signs and, you know, it's very funny. And Libras are party people. I'm a Libra, right? Libra Scorpio right on the cusp.
Uh-huh.
And, let's
look at the Libra
Libras.
Menu.
Libras love Libras, okay. and they are really good at party throwing. And if you meet someone who seems like they're just a natural host or hostess, and they're very social, they're probably Libra, because that's mm-hmm. you know that's the Libra thing. So,
well, here's a Libra menu. And did you do this to please yourself, or did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and also to please all my Libra friends, uh-huh. I thought, what would we all like?
Hummus with pita, carrot mint salad. Lamb, ginger, cilantro, meatballs with yogurt dip. This sounds like how I cook a
mm-hmm.
lot.
Mm-hmm.
Raw vegetable crudités, mozzarella, tomato, olive skewers, grapes, melon, and strawberries, and baklava.
So I was thinking about, you know, Libras, they love a party. They love to have lots of little snacky things. They're the scales. They never want to really, they always want to be in balance. They never really want to pick one thing. So in a way, they're dream restaurant critics because they just really want to taste everything on your plate and, you know, everyone mm-hmm. else's plate. So I thought of a lot of little snacky things that they could eat. You could eat while you're talking. Not have to stop. Things that are sweet. They're light. They like things that are light. They're sticky. They're not going to be the people who are going to eat, you know, the bugs. We were just talking about eating bugs. They're probably not going to be the bug eaters.
That would offend a Libra's sense of beauty.
Yes, I
right,
agree.
Libra's ruled by Venus.
That's right.
And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons they're also good party givers. Is
right.
You can, it's a beautiful way to entertain if you do
exactly.
it.
Exactly. They're kind of a little cerebral, but they're also sensual, and they definitely like to be, you know, surrounded by beauty. And, yeah, they could definitely appreciate, I mean, we were just looking at the poster for Insectapalooza. It's absolutely beautiful. And, so, yeah, they definitely would appreciate the beauty of an insect from afar, but would not necessarily want to be eating one.
So what I'm wondering at this point is who does?
Who eats insects?
Who? Yeah, which sign will eat the insects?
Oh. Oh, I would say, let's see.
Scorpio.
The right Capricorn.
Yeah.
Yeah, the right Capricorn.
And I'm the wrong Capricorn.
As Scorpio, let's see.
Aries is pretty...
Yeah, Aries probably
is. Aries is very adventurous. Aquarius is also kind of a, hey, up for anything kind of sign, you know? So, and
But they wouldn't enjoy it.
They might enjoy it, but they're travelers and they might find themselves in a place where
they wouldn't turn it down.
They're not too squeamish. They're kind of like, hey, okay.
Yeah.
They're kind of a, you know, hey, let's go sort of sign. So they might.
It's Mouthful. We're having a grand time here talking about lighthearted things from walking insects. We need to name this beautiful stick. Is that a stick in, leaf
it's
insect?
A stick insect.
Stick insects. I want us to find a name for her. I don't like her not having a name while she's spending so much time with
Please
us.
Please don't name her Twiggy.
Oh, God, that would never happen.
Okay. No. Everybody wants to name stick insects Twiggy.
Not me.
Old.
Oh no, that's I would never do something
you wouldn't.
So obvious.
I know you wouldn't, and so but I'm going to let you name her.
Well, I'll just see if I can get her to tell me her name.
There was a dancer. I can't remember. I don't know if she still dances, but she was an African American woman. She was beautiful, really tall, very strong. She danced in New York. I don't know that she danced with Alvin Ailey or something. And this insect has incredibly beautiful, long, and strong. You know, not exactly muscular, but, you know, beautifully elongated legs.
So. Elegant.
What was her? Okay.
What was her name?
Well, she's definitely not an Isadora.
No.
Mm-hmm. But we'll think. She's not
Judith Jameson.
Oh, Judith Jameson?
I don't know.
She doesn't look like a Judith.
She doesn't look like a Judy. No.
No.
Or Jamie, but.
We'll think of, we'll think of something. Bleeding Heart Cake. Now, this is in the... Scorpio menu. Oh, we should look at the Scorpio menu.
Yes.
We're going to be entering the sign of Scorpio in another few days. Mm-hmm. So you are right on that. Your birthday is the 23rd. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, some people say, oh, you're Scorpio. Some people say, oh, you're Libra. So it just means I get to read both.
Yes.
You know, both horoscopes, which is always fun.
Midnight Feast of Love. That is so Scorpio.
Well, I also wanted to put in for the Scorpio menu, I had the image that you would be home with your, you know, in your den with Scorpio. And there might be a lot of action going on in between the courses. So there had to be things that you could sort of eat with all of that food. All of the Scorpio menu has things you could eat with your hands. And it's also things you could eat and then entertain yourselves and then, you know, get back to it. You know, it's nothing that you have to drop everything and say, no, wait, the souffle is in the oven. You know, Virgo gets the souffle, you know, Scorpio gets, I think that wonderful figs with pomegranate.
It says here, figs and pigs with pomegranate molasses, balsamic vinegar, prosciutto, blue cheese, and fresh figs.
Mm-hmm. Heaven, really.
Yeah.
That is if you want something that will make people fall in love with you, sit in their lap and feed them these figs. Speaking from experience.
And we also have Tamsin's chicken livers.
Mm.
Now, that takes nerve.
Well, you know, Scorpio, they would be up.
They
for
would
it.
Go, yeah, they, absolutely.
They would absolutely be into the, you know, those tasty innards. They would be fine with that.
Yeah, chicken livers with cumin seed, coriander, salt, peppercorns, pinch of cayenne, butter. I love chicken livers. Mm-hmm. Lamb chops with port sauce. Mm-mm-mm. The kind you eat with your, like, lamb chop
like little
lollipops.
Ones. Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. Kinds you eat with your hands.
Ruby beet salad. And you have to talk about the bleeding heart cake. It's a fabulous name.
Well, I actually was inspired by a cake I had Valentine's Day a few years ago. I think it was in, I want to say 2004. It was the year that when Gavin Newsom said we had gay marriage in San Francisco for, you know, those 5 minutes that we had it the first time around. And I went because my really good friends, Char and Jackie, were getting married and went down to see them get married and then ran into a lot of people I knew and then ended up at Citizen Cake, a wonderful bakery in San Francisco. And one of the things they had on the menu at that time was something called a bleeding heart cake, where you put your fork into it. It was a chocolate cake. You put your fork into it, and this gush of raspberry came out. And it was absolutely delicious. And Elizabeth Faulkner, who's a friend of mine, she's just amazingly talented. And so her bakery is just great. And so I sort of kept that idea in my head for a long time. And so the bleeding heart cake is sort of an amalgam of that with a molten chocolate cake, so an individual kind of gooey, you know, that was that big cake that everybody had on their menus along with the creme brulee about 15 years ago. So it has a kind of a gooey centered, a warm chocolate cake, and then in the middle is raspberry filling. So when you cut into it, you get not only kind of slightly gooey chocolate batter, but you also get raspberry.
Yum. Okay, do we have any difficult signs? What sign was the hardest? Virgo?
No, Virgo. My mom is a Virgo, and I love, you know, I like Virgos a lot. And so I knew immediately they had to have brunch. Brunch, you know, because Virgo is an up and at 'em sign. They've got things to do. They're not a sort of hang around the house sign. And I also thought that Virgos deserved, like I said earlier, Virgos deserved a souffle because they will be on time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You are not. They are not the people who you tell them to show up at 11 and they come at 12:30. They will be. If you say 11, they will be there at 11. So they get rewarded by, you know, they get a beautiful souffle. So no, actually, Virgo was easy. Let's see, what Cancer I had to think about because Cancer is a little bit. It's not. We were just saying it's not one of those signs you immediately pick people out as a Cancer. Oh, you've got to be a Cancer. You know, people
Cancer man. I can spot a Cancer man at 50 yards.
Really?
Absolutely.
What do you see?
You know, it might just be pheromones. I'm not sure, but I can spot Cancer men. I have a rule. No. Good friends.
Yes, I'm afraid I feel that way about Geminis. I have dated enough Geminis to know I adore them. A lot of my really close friends are Geminis. Loads of fun, but I have to say they're on my list of, you know, they're on the do not date list. I'm very sorry. All you beautiful Gemini men and women, I'm sorry. Sorry.
I hope none of the Cancers I've dated are listening. Wasn't you honest that made me make the... But really, every time I have broken that rule, and I learned this really, really early in my life, every time I've broken that rule,
you've regretted it.
There you go. You knew this was what was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I find Libras are a lot of fun, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to last. But you can get into a lot of, you know, you can have a lot of good, Libras and Libras definitely have a lot of good times together. Virgos and Virgos, often they find, and other signs do not necessarily appreciate the perfection that is a Virgo. So they actually match up well together, I think. And Jen, I think you match up often well with your, you know, whatever is your sign opposite.
Like, your opposite sign.
Yeah, so mine is Aries, and, you know, there's always a...
You also have to look, at the seventh house and where your north node is, and that will give you some real information if you want to. One of my dear friends in New York City, who's a fabulous artist, and if anyone wants to write this down, Elizabeth Knowles, Knowles. In fact, I have to introduce Frederick, you and Elizabeth. She works with biological forms in her art. And when I first met her, it was when I was at Yaddo, and she was there. She and I were there almost for the same amount of time, so I got to know her. And she was doing these biological forms using wire and then some gouache or something that would rub onto the wire. And they wouldn't necessarily, they weren't inset, they weren't representational, but they evoked the natural world. And now she's doing a lot of painting, but not like oil paint on canvas. And it's by, and she's worked with, somebody gave her a huge amount of x-rays, human x-rays. She ended up cutting those up and making these amazing constructions. She's just a great artist, really interesting stuff that resonates with what you're doing. But she's also a very good, detailed, serious astrologer. And I mean, she's told me, I've learned more about astrology from her than I have any. And I've had a lifelong, I confess, had a lifelong interest. But I learned a lot about the North Node and the importance of the North Node and the South Node and Chiron, you know, the minor planets you know, it's really fun. It's a beautiful language. When we were at Yaddo, you know, a lot of people, just the total scorn that they heap upon astrology. But there was this man there from England. He was older, quite a bit older. And he was writing a novel. And he was fascinated with astrology. And he just said, it doesn't matter if it's true. He says, it's just such a beautiful language. Mm-hmm. And it's such a beautiful way to talk about humans and human behavior. I always remembered that.
No, I think it's really true. It's a beautiful way to sort of organize the world. I mean, we're
this random world. Oh, and
we have to organize people. Yeah. I mean, now people talk about Enneagrams, and there's always different, you know, Myers-Briggs or whatever. There's always a way that you have to categorize people because you can't, I mean, just like Linnaeus, you know, why we have all the taxonomy of different, you know, plants and animals and everything. It's just we have to organize the world, and astrology is one way to do that. And it is. It's very, I think it can be very elegant, and it can be, you know, kind of fascinating. And, you know, everybody's got a sign. It's always, you know, you've got to weigh in with someone. You know, people, they will say they don't care, but, you know, everyone likes to talk about themselves.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's, you know, it's a little funny. It's a funny little way to do that.
I'm looking here at Aquarius, the chicken or the egg. I love that. And I love the menu. I really love this Aquarius menu. Deviled eggs, roast chicken, southern grits, pickled peaches, buttered peas, hummingbird cake.
It was fun because I think when I was thinking of Aquarius, the Aquarians I know are very, they're travelers, they're adventurers, they're idea people. You know, they're the water carrier, that idea of like the ideas just pour out of them. So I was first trying to think of, you know, what was the most sort of adventurous and wild meal that I could come up with. And I thought, you know, but every traveler has to come home. And I thought, you know, really, Aquarius kind of likes to be taken care of. So I thought, why not a little down-home meal when they come back to ground? So that was why I thought of that nice, really old-fashioned southern meal. And part of it also was thinking, I used to really knock myself out trying to cook for people when they came over to my house for dinner. And then I realized, you know, I would take me forever and nothing would be ready. And my friends would just be sort of making out on the couch because it was 9 o'clock and, you know, whatever fancy thing I was making wasn't ready. And finally, I just thought, oh, for goodness sakes, roast chicken and cookies. So for a while, that was really what I made. I made roast chicken and I made chocolate chip cookies. And really, everybody was happy. You know, dinner got on the table and everybody just, you know, chatted. And it was, you know, it was a good time.
So Elizabeth Taylor with her 8 husbands, she's a Pisces. I'm looking at the Pisces menu now.
Yeah, really.
I can see, she married everyone, you know. She married every man she slept with, you know, before. Mm-hmm. I love this sentence. Let's see. Pisces love to be treated right, and where other signs might be embarrassed by the full Monty of roses, candlelight, and Barry White. Pisces will see it as a sign of dedication and true caring. So I immediately think, Kurt Cobain. He was a Pisces. He would have killed you if you tried to seduce him with Barry White.
you know, who knows? People aren't always as tough as they seem.
that's absolutely true.
No, it's true. I think, you know, more romance, more cooking at home. I often feel that's part of in the very beginning in the book. It says, you know, how you get together, you know, how you get through the first 3 dates or so is, you know, up to you. But then eventually you got to get your honey home. You got to see how they behave in your house, you know, how they behave in captivity as well. You know, you got to cook for them. And I think many people outsource that and you know, spend a lot of time in restaurants. And that's fun. But really, there's nothing like, you know, having somebody in your house.
You have to have them in. I have to see how they fit. Mm-hmm. I know. And I'm looking at the bug again.
I know.
She's so beautiful. I think the name that comes to mind, and I'm not really sure why, it just pops into my head. I think her name is Evangeline.
Evangeline works for me.
Yeah. It's all of a sudden, Evangeline was in my head. So.
Well, I'm glad
she told
named.
Me.
There you go.
Because
that's a beautiful name for her.
There will be a lot of children who are looking at Evangeline, and that's one of the questions they ask.
What's her name?
Simply,
what's her name? I wanted a job. I wanted my job to be naming things. I like to name things.
Yes. I always wanted lipsticks. I always that's a job. I'm still
waiting. Yeah, naming
to be,
lipsticks.
To be a
absolutely.
Lipstick namer. Yeah,
yes.
Definitely. I know that would definitely be fun.
So the book and I should repeat the title. The book is The Astrology Cookbook, Stephanie Rosenbaum, A Cosmic Guide to Feasts of Love. It's just come out this month, right?
Yes, it actually came out a couple months ago.
Okay.
It came out from a small press, independent press, based in San Francisco called Manic D Press. And they're a wonderful local press, and they've actually been around, I want to say 20 years or at least, which is, you know, in independent press years, that's about a century. And they do a lot of poetry. In fact, the woman that is a young actress, Amber Tamblyn, she just has a new book out called Bang Ditto. She's actually a very accomplished poet as well. Mm-hmm. And so they just published her book of poetry, which is great, and a lot of really fun, interesting books, a lot of pop culture. They did the autobiography of Bigfoot, which is a really hysterical, fantastic book. All kinds of interesting pop culture. And a lot of poetry and a lot of some graphic novels, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So, and the publisher is a friend of mine. And so I had this idea and happened to be talking to her about it. And finally she just said, oh, you just write that book for me. So I did. And the fun part about it was that since I wasn't working with a typical cookbook publisher,
right,
I could do kind of whatever I wanted. So there's, and I could be a lot looser, in terms of what I was saying. And so I didn't have to be, it wasn't quite so formulaic as if, yes, I was doing it, say, for, you know,
I need to meet your friend.
So this is the one and only cookbook on their list.
Well, I think they need more.
I think they need more. Mm-hmm. And so I got to be a little more irreverent, which was, mm-hmm, which was a lot of fun, because
we need more of that in cookbooks. We,
yeah,
really do. I mean,
I
think some of my books would have been much more successful
if your own voice could have come out more.
Yeah, well, especially because I pretty much drew the line when it comes to narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's my voice in the narrative. Mm-hmm. No, I won't take that out. But when it came to titles, they were so prosaic, mm-hmm, and unimaginative, like the BLT cookbook. No wonder it didn't sell well. I thought it should, I mean, what did I want? Well, I tried, when I did Salt and Pepper, I wanted Salt and Pepper, a love story.
Right.
And I did, yeah, couldn't, and then it was the same editor for BLT, so I tried it on there again. I said, I think it should be called BLT, a love story.
Right.
Well, that's not what this is. And it's like, yes, it is.
No, right.
BLTs are all about love.
Yes. And the narrative for both, mm-hmm, books. That's what it was.
Right, absolutely.
And they even, you know, with Salt and Pepper, I had to fight for the word with. What they wanted was Salt and Pepper, 135 perfectly seasoned recipes for the cook's best friends. And it's like, mm-hmm, it sounds like I'm cooking for my pals.
Right.
No one's going to realize that you want that to mean salt and pepper. That makes no sense.
No.
So I got the best friends out, and I think my editor still is pissed off about that. So it was going to be Salt and Pepper, 135 perfectly seasoned recipes. And it's like, that sounds like it's a cookbook.
Yeah.
It's a book to curl up with and read.
Right.
So I fought and fought, and they begrudgingly put with on, mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. But they never got it.
Yep.
And if it would have been Salt and Pepper, a love story, I think it would have just really sold.
Absolutely. No, I think then that book was very ahead of its time, too. Because
I know now everyone's writing about it, making money on
the
concept.
I know. Or, you know, you go into everybody's house and they have seven different kinds of salt.
And none of them know my book.
Right.
It drives me crazy.
It was a wonderful, wonderful book. But yeah, there's a whole section in there sort of against being a condiment slut, which is because I feel strongly that, you know, you just need a handful of good things and you don't need the jalapeno, horseradish, cranberry, mustard. You know,
you just don't.
You bought it at that little shop in Napa, and then, you know, you ate it. You took one spoonful, and, you know, now it's just sitting there gathering fur in your
So exactly.
I say, you know, resist being a condiment slut. Don't be a condiment slut.
Absolutely. You know, you've always had the best way with words. I remember one of your reviews. I think it must have been for the Bay Guardian, and I'd been reading you, and we were working at the same time. Mm-hmm. I was covering up here. I wasn't doing San Francisco Magazine yet. And something about, you said you would clomp over the Bay Bridge and platform heels to have that again. It's like, all right, this is my girl. I like her. So I love your writing. We've got just a couple minutes. What are you working on now?
I'm actually coming up with another, working on another book. It's actually going to be a jam cookbook because I know it may sound like I'm jumping on the canning bandwagon, but I've been making jam for years, and I think it's something that everybody can make, and it's a lot of fun. And again, it will keep you from buying that overpriced, you know, stuff out that's already out there that has weird ingredients in it. So the jam cookbook is going to be the next one.
And do you have a website?
Yes, astrologycookbook.com.
Oh, astrologycookbook.com.
Yes.
Excellent. There's an easy way.
There's an easy way to remember. And
it's just
a very sassy pink website. And
great. And your local bookstores.
Yes, local bookstores.
Local bookstores. Yes. There's plenty of them. You got Copperfields, Reader's Books. We've got great bookstores in the North Bay. So just look for the bookstore close to you. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you so much.
Have a great time celebrating your birthday in New York.
Thank you.
And we've got... Let's go through the details again. Frederick, first of all, thank you for bringing Evangeline in. And the jumping spider with the, it's green fangs.
Yeah, metallic green fangs.
Green fangs. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should name him Metallica.
Thank you so much. Insect Palooza is taking place on
October 24th, 9 to 4.
Next Saturday.
At Sonoma State. And you can find all the information on the Sonoma State main page. There's a link.
And bring your checkbook, your credit cards.
No credit cards.
Okay.
Sorry.
Checkbook and cash. Yeah. You can buy, can I say any of the things you can?
Sure.
Queen Bee T-shirts, worker bee T-shirts.
Yes.
Antennae.
Antenna. You'll know the volunteers because they will have their antenna on.
And their worker bee shirts. And there's only one queen bee.
Is that you?
Yes.
Oh, good. I might wear my queen bee T-shirt.
And,
No, well, I'm teasing.
I will be selling queen bee shirts. And then we also now have drone shirts.
Oh, that's great. Get them. That makes me want to have a party.
Yes. It's somebody who ordered some said drones. They're the guys who come to the party, and they're a lot of fun, and then they don't fold chairs at the end.
No. And I just love it with bees. Well, you know, from your honey book, the mm-hmm. thing I always think about bees, drones, sitting out on the little ledge while the girls are in making honey, and winter comes, and they won't get off the porch, and the females just go out and tear off their wings and kick them off.
Yeah.
But really, we love men.
You get your job.
we're just having fun. How can you not have fun when it's the astrology cookbook? Thanks so much to both of you. Thanks to you for sticking with us. Have a great week and meet me back here next Sunday for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour, not animal, most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. See you in a week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Time for dinner now.